To introduce you to Laura from USA. Here, she is here to speak for us today. Give her a big hand.
No, the mute button.
Technical. I'm an addict. My name's Laura. And I am so excited to be here. I can't sit. I have to stand. I'm just too excited. I have a friend of mine that when I tell him I'm nervous, he goes, "You're not nervous. You're just excited." I'm nervous. Okay, I'm nervous. It's a little of both. I want to first thank you for welcoming me here to Denmark. Through my recovery, I've had the opportunity to visit many places. And love has no language barrier. And I have felt love. From the minute I got off the plane, they were like, with the flag. I felt it through the emails. I felt it all along. So I thank you for your love and how gracious everyone has been. If I start naming names, I'll miss someone. So I just want to thank the committee, thank the fellowship, thank my friends, thank you. I don't even know where to begin. I usually kind of chit-chat, and then at some point my higher power shows up. So one of the things I have to tell you, just to get this out of the way, I don't know how you people recover here. Look, listen to me. This is just my opinion. You're all so pretty. How do you concentrate in a meeting? I mean, how? You're all so good looking. Oh, thank God I'm happily married. Really. Group of people. I mean, yeah, everyone, yeah. No, I don't need glasses. Well, you're still beautiful. You're still beautiful. No, really, you just, maybe it's how your Viking look, I don't know that Viking, or just your insides show, and that's the beauty. I'm going to tell you a little bit. I guess I'm going to start at the beginning, you know, where I come from. Am I talking slow enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Because usually when they have someone who does sign language, you know, with sign language, you know, and they're usually, you know, trying to keep up with me because I talk very fast. So I'm trying to slow down. I'm from the USA. I'm from New York City. Times Square, you know, what you see in the, that's where I'm from. I am the firstborn in the United States of my family. My family is from Cuba and Spain. So, soy una Latina. But when I was using, I'd be whatever you wanted me to be. Viking, whatever, I don't know. Want me to be? Anyway, I knew how to play many different things. I come from New York when there was a time that there were very many different nationalities, Russian, Irish, everyone, it was a melting pot. But I was a little bit different because I was dark-haired. I was in a neighborhood, a very Irish neighborhood. So everyone had red hair and green eyes or blonde hair or blue eyes. And I kind of stood out a little bit. I didn't know that, I thought I stood out because I looked different, but I think I thought different. I didn't think like other kids. I didn't think I was pretty enough. I never thought I was smart enough. I never thought I could play sports. I don't know why I always didn't believe in myself as a child. I was very shy. Very, very shy. That's not who I am today. I stand here and I give it all to you. I don't get naked, but I get naked in here. I share what all I can do is share who I am, where I come from, and why I stay here. To be honest with you, this was the last place for me to come. There was no other place. But I'll tell you a little bit about how I grew up. I grew up in a neighborhood that there was a lot of drinking and drugs, and there was nothing like that in my home. My parents, my father was a school teacher. My mother was a seamstress. She made clothing. And I have an older brother that's brilliant. I mean, I'm talking brilliant. You ever hear of Harvard? Harvard University? My brother went to Harvard. Me? No. Same house, same opportunity. I just didn't think the same. He wanted to read books. He wanted to do things. I wanted to hang out outside. I wanted to be with friends. So anyway, at some point, as a young girl, I got introduced to my first, for me, it was my first drug. I guess you have it here too. When you go to the dentist gives you... I loved it. So I would go to the dentist a lot. I had very straight teeth. I love the dentist. So at some point, I learned about alcohol, I learned about drugs, and you know, we all know how we use. I used everything I had to use to get here. I told every lie. I slept with every person I had to sleep with. I stole every dollar or crone. I stole what I did, whatever I had to do, as you did. But when I got clean, it was the other fellowship. We didn't really know as much about this fellowship. You were growing up in a time that you were so fortunate. We didn't have as many meetings, we didn't have as many opportunities. But at any rate, what happened for me, there were many signs. It was a long time ago that I knew I didn't use like other people. I don't know if anybody could relate. My friends would party, what we call party, and go home. I'd make believe I was going home, and then I was back out. I didn't know how to stop. I was the type of person that I wouldn't stop for days. From the minute it went in me, I didn't want it to stop. And I knew a long time ago that I was not like other people. Does anybody remember when that, you have to have that realization, that discovery within yourself that you know that you are not normal. What's normal? I don't know. I ask people all the time, what's normal? Nobody knows. Even normal people don't know what's normal. I don't know. I thought it was my racing thoughts. I thought it was my bad behavior. No, I don't know what normal is. But all I can tell you is that I am not normal. Okay, I know I'm not. I'm not like another person. So growing up, as I said, I didn't feel very special. I didn't feel anything. I wasn't great at school. I wasn't great at anything. I was kind of just an average person. And my brother was very, 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 very intelligent. He could read something, memorize it. And they would say to me, why can't you be like Daniel? Why don't you behave like Daniel? And I was like, stop. So I went the other direction. As I said, I started using drugs as a teenager. I continued to use drugs. Now, part of my story, and this is just the truth, I'm gonna get honest. I lasted a lot longer in the streets using because it's just the truth. I always was in a relationship. I was always with a man. Okay, I got a couple of yes. And that's probably why I stayed alive as long as I did. Because if I was on my own, I would have died. I know that. So I thank the men who loved me and failed to love me and tried to love me because I'm here because of them. And I have, I was definitely a volunteer. Yeah. Nobody forced me, I was there. And I used my body, I used my gifts as a woman. With my friends, I'm cleaning it up. to take advantage of what I needed to stay alive. So I was somebody who went from relationship to relationship to relationship. I've been married a few times. I have the best husband. This is my best husband. Best husband of my husbands. But anyway, I love them too. They were wonderful men, but they weren't the right one for me. Anyway, like I said, I did everything I had to do. You know, I would get busted. I'd sit in jail waiting for the judge and say, oh. Now, I use the term God as higher power. It's easier, it's shorter, it's more condensed. It works for me. So if I use the word God, you know who I'm talking about. So I'd say, God, please get me out of here. I promise. And the minute I got out, back to getting high. You know, it's almost like I got high against my will. You know, I knew I didn't want to, but I would use anyway. I didn't know how to control it. I didn't know there was another way. I didn't think I could. I thought, you know what they say, once an addict, always an addict? And I remember the first time somebody called me an addict. I said, I'm not an addict. How could you call me an addict? They saw it, but I couldn't. I'd look in the mirror and go, you lost some weight, you really look good, you know? That's what I would say to myself. I'll look better tomorrow, it'll be better. That's what I would say. But those were the lies. And I don't know about you, but I've got a liar inside of my head. You know, and I know my disease today. My disease will tell me stories all the time. It'll say, it's okay. It talks to me. And it'll tell me to do things. And I have to say, stop. So anyway, I come from a loving family. I come from a decent area. I was not exposed to these things, but I sought them out. I was attracted to it. I found it interesting. I didn't want to play dolls. I wanted to be over there with the boys. I wanted to go over there. Whatever was good for me, I wanted to go across the street. If you said, stay here, I wanted to go there. Doesn't make me a bad person, but I can see that about myself today. And these are things that I realized through the steps and through recovery. So when I finally realized, you know, I would always try and clean up. Do you know what I mean? Clean up. Not get clean, clean up. Stop using this drug, stop using that. Maybe I'll just use this and I'll stay with him and I'll go here and I won't do that. It was always my control and manipulation. I thought I knew better. I had never heard complete abstinence. I never knew it. Nobody was completely abstinent. How do you do that? So I would always try and control it, and I found that it never worked. My first introduction to the program of Narcotics Anonymous was through H&I. I was sitting in a hospital. I had gone there. I was at the end of my rope. I was 72 pounds. I was shaking. I was crying. I'm a Catholic by birth, so I was doing this, saying, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. That's just the way it was for me. That's how I ended up getting introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through treatment. Like I said, if I go back a little bit, my story, I started to really realize that I had a problem a few years before I got clean. My best friend, who I used to get high with all the time, I found murdered. They killed her. And I called 911, I called the police. The police came, and when they came, there was a police officer who started talking to me, and I thought he liked me. I thought so, because why would you like me? But he really wanted to find out what was going on. We started talking, and let me not say talking. I was interrogated about the death of my friend. She had gotten murdered because there was drugs in the house, and her boyfriend were murdered. And he said to me, he was the first person who ever said to me, "You're not like the rest of them. You're not like them. You really should try and get your life together." And I looked at him and I said, "How?" And to make a very long story short, I moved in with him. It worked. He was kind of Viking-like. Anyway, so he was a police officer in New York City. He was a homicide detective. He investigated murders. And he's a very interesting guy. He'd been to war, had been very, very, very good person, a good person, tried to help many people. So I tell you this story that he helped to clean me up. He helped me get clean. All right, he let me drink wine, okay, and smoke a little pot. So I thought I was clean. I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought I was clean. I wasn't doing cocaine or heroin or pills. Right? I was clean in my book. Does anybody, you get it, right? You don't know complete absence, you figure you clean up. So there was just a matter of time, maybe about a year I lived like that, maybe a year and a half. I went back to school, I got a job, I was working on Wall Street. You hear Wall Street in Manhattan, Wall Street, yeah. And then I ran into some people that use drugs. One night, they said, "Come on, do some." The end of that. Okay, so I was right back to where I was. But what I'm saying is that when I hit my bottom, when I hit my last bottom, I called Michael, the police officer. I didn't know anybody else. And he said to me, "I don't know what to do, but what I will tell you is that I'm going to send you to a place that they send the police officers to get help." And that's where I went. So like I said, I went to a hospital. I saw H&I, they came in. And what attracted me at that moment was the men. They looked good. They had muscles and they smelled good and they talked like I talked, but they were clean. So that was the attraction. I went to treatment. I stayed in treatment for a while, but I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And I'm saying this to the ladies, I didn't stay on my side of the street. The men and the women were separated, but I found a way to get over there. Why? I don't know. I can't remember any of them. I, there was one fellow that I liked. If he was standing next to me, I wouldn't know who he is, but it was very important to me to get over there. And I did, I succeeded. That's the way I lived. When you told me no, I did it anyway. So while I was in this facility, they introduced me when I first got there, and because I'm Catholic, I don't know what your religions are or anything, I'm saying how I was brought up, they asked me what my religion was, and it was what I was born with as a little girl and how my parents raised me. So I said, "I'm Catholic." They said, "Lucky for you, Father, Flanagan is doing confession." Do you know what confession is? Yeah, okay. So I did, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 25 years. Are you ready?" And I lied. I didn't tell him the truth. How am I going to tell him the truth? I told him a little bit. You know, I stole from my mother. So he told me to say a few prayers, and it was done. And I thought, how does that work? That's ridiculous. It just didn't work for me. So anyway, when they introduced me to my therapist had a crucifix, a big crucifix. She was a nun. I had a nun as a therapist. This is my story, not yours. This is mine. It was kind of weird. So at any rate, while I was there, I had to do steps. But it was different then. It wasn't like we didn't have the book. You know, we did steps through the other fellowship at that time because that's all they had. And I really did I was the best little recovering addict in group as I could be. I'd say what you wanted me to say. I sat how you, I acted like you want, but that wasn't really me. I was in my mind thinking, how do I get over there? How do I get over there? So what ended up happening was, while I was there, they decided that I should stay a little longer. You know how they say some are sicker than others? I'm the sicker. So I stayed a little longer. And through that process, the nun convinced me to stay. So I stayed, and she suggested I go to a halfway house. I don't know what you call it here. Do you call it halfway? Yeah. So she set it all up for me. I had a phone interview. I was accepted. It wasn't Harvard, but it was special to me, you know. And I went to this halfway house. My parents had the police officer come and take me there. So when I got there, what's interesting about it is that it was a church and a convent. That was the address. So he said to me, you better find it. It's late, it's cold, it was near Canada. You better go. So I got out and I knocked on the church, on the convent door, and they open up the door, and it's a woman with a crucifix around her neck. And she said, you must be Laura, come on in. And I said, this is like weird. And she said, we've been waiting for you. It was a convent that had been converted to a halfway house, and it was run by recovering nuns. Nuns who, I say nuns with habits, right? Nuns who use, yeah. And these, you want to talk about love? And I figured, if their higher power could forgive them, maybe I had a shot, right? Maybe. So these women were wonderful. They helped me, they taught me. I mean, I learned everything. But again, this is my story. I did everything that they wanted me to do, but I never told anyone the truth. Never, never. I'd sit in the back of the room and I'd be checking out what's going on. Who's coming, who's going, who's driving this, who's going there, who's dating who. Nothing about recovery. In a group, I was the perfect little addict, but I was never being honest. I'd give you a little bit to see how you reacted. I'd give you a little bit more to see if you were listening. I'd give you, maybe I'd turn it around a little so I didn't sound so bad. You know, that's what I did. So, I hate to tell you, but you probably know the ending of that. I used. I wasn't done. I wasn't ready to do what it took. And that one, I was just gonna do one. I don't know about anybody if you understand. Just one. It was just one. I had 9 months. I deserve one, right? Not much of my behavior changed except not using. That's all that changed. So what happened for me was I went to go see my connection. Just to show them how good I looked, you know? I looked good. I got some weight on. I wasn't 72 pounds. And he said, wow, you look great. I said, thank you. He said, why don't you take this? This one's on me. He knew. He gave it to me. I was right back where I was, like that. And there was another husband in between there. I had a first husband and a second. Yeah, so I'm up to his husband, too. So what happened for me was I just couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. I started to get busted more. I started getting more and more trouble. I'd go to jail. It's a funny story. I used to, if I went to jail, because I didn't look that bad. Do you call it a hooker? Hooker? Yeah? Hooker? Prostitute? They'd say to me, are you a hoe? Oh, that's what we call, are you a prostitute? I said, no, not me. Oh, you're a drug addict. And they'd walk away from me. They go, oh, that I was doing something wrong. And I didn't realize that I was doing a lot of things wrong. And that people who were getting busted were looking down on me because I was a drug addict. You know, if I was a bank robber, I had a little bit more respect. But because I was a drug addict, nobody wanted anything to do with me. So after my last arrest, I decided, my husband, number two, and I decided to go to Florida, leave New York. He figured, geographic, let's take her out of New York, maybe something will change. And I don't know if you know this story yourself, but taking me to another state didn't change anything. It just changed the weather. That's all it changed. The weather, it was sunny. I was using in the sun instead of in the cold. It just took a short period of time for me to find people who use like me, and there I was. I was back to where I'd always been. And my husband said to me, why don't we go back to Narcotics Anonymous? Everything was great when you were in Narcotics Anonymous. Can we please go to a meeting? So it took him about 2 weeks to convince me to get me to a meeting. And I went to the meeting. I had 3 pairs of pants on because I was so skinny. And I went to the meeting, I sat there, and when they said, is there someone who wants to pick up a white key tag, I jumped up. And I was in the back of the room, and I went to the front. I don't know, I think my higher power was pushing me, because I didn't want to. I was just there to make him happy. And I went up there, and I took a white key tag, and a woman said to me, I know your pain. She says, I could see the pain in your eyes. I said, really? But what my head said was, you don't know anything about me. You have no idea what I've been through. How do you, what pain? Oh, I was judging her like, great, but it was there. You could see it. And she said, you never have to feel that pain again. Never. If you stay in Narcotics Anonymous. Or about that day is that I stayed. I stayed, and that was 1991, and I've been here ever since. No matter what's going on. Well, I'm going to tell you, I immediately got a sponsor. I remember asking, I was told to take phone numbers, so I took phone numbers and I interviewed them, you know? I didn't say, will you sponsor me? I'll call them, see if they call me back. And it's back when there was phone booths, you know, no cell phones, no, none of that. So you had to actually be home to answer the phone. And there was this one woman who sounded like me. She kind of looked like me, and she came from the same area as me. And I said, yeah, maybe. No. So what happened was she did H&I. That was her love. And she would take me to H&I meetings. And I had a little bitty, no, let's call a spade, I used that week. It was like the first week I used, and then I called her and she said, come with me. Come with me, I'm going to an H&I meeting, but you can't say a word because everybody in there has more clean time than you. So, okay. So that was May 4th, okay, and that's when I went with her. So I went into this detox and I knew it. The smell, you know what we smell like when we're DJ, we don't smell good, but I knew the smell. I knew the look, I knew we have pajamas that say property of, you know, and we have slippers that have smiley faces. And that's what you have, it's a county facility, so that's what you have to wear. And I felt at home, I heard hope for the first time. And that was May 4th, and I haven't used since. And when I tell you that she said to me, you'll never have to feel this way again, and I'm going to sponsor you and take you through the steps. And I said, really? She said, absolutely. And when she walked, I walked behind her. When she sat, I sat down. When she, you know, when I was in the streets, when I wanted to know where to cop, I followed you. If I wanted to know how to get high, I followed you and learned. Well, I got clean, I followed her. I followed her everywhere. If she stopped, you'd have to, I'd hit her. I followed her meetings. H&I, I started doing H&I as soon as, back then you could do H&I with a weak clean, but you couldn't talk. You only went into the jail and sat there, or went into the treatment center. And I did it, and I fell in love with H&I. H&I was my baby. It was my baby. I loved it. And, you know, there was my husband number two stuck in there. You know, he tried to help me. And now my life changed. And this is my story. It's not your story. My story was that I was free for the first time. Everybody looked beautiful. Everything sounded wonderful. It all... And I didn't want to be with him. He couldn't, before he was so important to me, now Narcotics Anonymous became important to me. And my sponsor said to me, no major decision for the first year. So we stayed together. And we worked it out, but he'd come and he felt a little uncomfortable and he would try. And so we stayed together for about a year and a half. And at a year and a half, I said to him, we're dating, we're trying to work this out, and it's not working. And he said, I'll give you a divorce if you promise me you stay clean. I said, I promise you, I will never get high again. He said, then I'll sign the papers. We use the same lawyer, we had no fighting. I'm gonna take this, you take that. And he said, just stay clean, because you're so beautiful when you stay clean. And I want you to live your life the way you should. And if I'm gonna hold you back, you're right. And I tell you, I was sad. You know, it wasn't that I was just happy that I was divorced and a free woman. It was like that dream had come to an end. That love, I had to move on. And that's just what happened to me. So then we go into the other stage. Everything was new. Woohoo! I loved it, you know, and I had problem concentrating because everybody looked so good. So I sat in the front. I looked at the speaker's mouth. And I would say a prayer. If you're up there and you're listening, please help me to hear one thing I need to stay clean. And I did that every meeting, and I still do it today. Even when the person who's speaking, that I might have seen them in the parking lot behaving another way, and my judgment wants to kick in. Did you see how they spoke to that new guy? I have to say, none of my business. I sit down, I say the prayer, and I listen. And that's what works for me. Believe me, I came in here with a lot of judgment, a lot of opinion, a lot of control. My way or no way. You have to do it my way. No, my way. And I loved H&I. I did every level of H&I. Every level. I was the chair of H&I for 5 years. That's unheard of in my life. I mean, I thought I was Mrs. H&I. I'm H&I. Everything I know, H&I. I'll teach you anything. I brought more meetings into jail. I mean, maximum security prisons for women. I walk in there, you know, hey girls, you know, like, whoa. Anyway, this is what worked for me. It was my joy. It was something that I was able to receive gratification from. It was my service, and it was something that I loved. I loved it, loved it, loved it. We would throw banquets, we would do, I was saying earlier that if a jail didn't want us, we would invite somebody from the jail, an official, to come to like a dinner or something, and they'd come and they'd see us, and then next week they'd say, okay, you can come in. We dopamine them. We showed them who we were, but they liked it. They didn't know, they were frightened of who we were. They had no idea. So like I said, H&I was the greatest gift that the fellowship gave me, and I gave the fellowship back. In loving service, I traveled all over and I did it. I met women in H&I. I remember early on, I was a woman that was in jail, and she asked me to be her sponsor. And I called my sponsor. I said, she asked me to be her sponsor, my first sponsor. And my sponsor says, where is she? And I said, jail. She said, yeah, she's safe. Yeah, go ahead. Practice with her, you know? So I did, and she stayed clean for many years, you know, many, many years. All I can tell you is that this program has given me such incredible gifts. You know, one of the biggest things for me was I had a lot of wreckage and damage with my family. I don't know if that's your case. Your family might have said, oh, you're clean, wonderful. Here's the keys to the house. Not my family. My family was very hesitant on taking me back in. But in early recovery, my mother got ill with cancer. And they decided rather than to save me that I might use, they said, it's time for me to grow up and show up. So my sponsor said, if you're going home to New York City because your mother's got cancer and she's gonna have surgery, she had breast cancer, she said, I want you to go to a meeting, I want you to raise your hand, say, my name's Laura, I'm visiting from Florida. I didn't know why she wanted me to do it, but she told me to do it. And I went and I went and I went to meetings, every day I went to meetings, and I would sit by my mother's bedside, and I remember my mother coming out of the surgery, and I'm crying, and I'm on my knees, and I'm praying. Now, I pray on my knees, okay? I don't know how you pray, and that's fine. But I say, I pray because I got on my knees for a lot less. And also, too, I get on my knees because my mind is always racing. It's so until I get down on my knees, I don't stop racing. It's just what I do. I don't judge anybody how they do it. That's what works for me. And there's sometimes I'll be in a ladies' room and I'll be down on my knees. I don't care. I don't care. I'll be in a dress and I'm down because that's how it works for me. Now, when I'm driving, it doesn't work, you know, but otherwise it works. So if anybody was listening, you'll tell me where I was at. Where was I at? My mother's bed. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm by my mother's bed, I'm crying, I'm on my knees, and my mama says to me, ay, Laurita, why are you crying? And I said, oh, mama, I can't believe all the years what I've done, and I haven't been here for you, and now I'm clean. And she said, ay, Laurita, don't you worry. I'm not going anywhere. Not yet. So I said, mama, you know, I want to do things for you. I want to be the good daughter that I never was. I mean, I ran away from home when I was 15 years old. Why? Because, you know, I just did. I just did. When I think the torture I put her through, so she said to me, don't worry, it'll be fine. So we made a decision. My mother had left Cuba a long time ago and had never gone back. So I said, mom, when I have 5 years, the doctor said she couldn't travel for 5 years. So I said, when you have 5 years clean of cancer, I'll have 5 years clean of Narcotics Anonymous. And you know what? We'll take a trip. She said, okay, Laurita. Now, I had made so many promises through the years. I had promised I'll be back in a little while and I'd take the car and I'd come back for a week. I'll pay you back. I wouldn't pay. So she didn't know, but she said to me, okay, Laurita, that's fine. So through those 5 years, I kept on going home. I'd go home to visit, I'd show up. They didn't give me the car. They never, but I'd go to them, I'd call Narcotics Anonymous, somebody would pick me up, I'd go to a meeting, and she'd say, what time are you coming home? Oh, I'll be home in 2 hours. Okay, maybe three, and I was home. They were shocked. They'd be sitting in the living room, they'd go, she's home. They couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe how I was showing up. And I'd say I'm coming from the airport, or I rented a car, and I'd show up, and they'd be, this thing is incredible. This Narcotics Anonymous thing. So what I'm getting at is that I started to do things a little different. And one of the smallest things was just showing up, doing the right thing, going to work. I got a job when I had 9 months clean. No, excuse me, 90 days clean. And I stayed at that job for 21 years. I mean, addicts don't do that. Cuba? Well, I went back to New York for a big New York convention of 5 years later. It was in May. And I kept on going to meetings. As some of you might have heard, I had met Susan at a meeting, my travel companion, and my best friend. We met when I had 6 months clean. So I would see her every time I went up to New York also. So when I had 5 years clean, a group said, "You've been coming so much, why don't you celebrate with us?" Now, I don't know how you celebrate, but in New York, it's really cool because the whole meeting is about you. The whole meeting, it's all about you. Nobody else, just you. I love it. You know, all about me. It's about, well, I had to share it with somebody. He was another fiance, so, but he's still clean. Good guy. 30-something years in the program. But anyway, he and I went to celebrate, and I invited my mother. And my mother came to her first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and Susan was there, and I remember it. You pick a few people to speak. You know, Susan spoke for me, and Rosalie, and a few people spoke. And then they present you your medallion. And I said, I'd like to present this medallion to my mother. And the lights went out. And the door opened on the side. And my mother came out with a birthday cake. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, my Rita. Happy birthday to you. You guys bought a cake and gave it to my mother. I never remember a birthday song better than that one. It was perfect. People, there were biker guys, you know, biker, like Vikings, crying, going, "Mama." She said, "Laurita, what nice people these people are. What love. Why you don't hang out with people like this before?" I said, "I did. They just not using. Such nice people. You should go to the house. Go to the house." All I can say is that the last birthday that I really truly remember with my mother, and she went home and she told my father, you know, my parents were married 54 years. They loved each other, and I think the only thing they ever fought about was me. I was the one that had them fight. And she said, "This program works. I want you to come." So my father didn't show up. He didn't believe it. He didn't see it. But I tell you this because that summer, I took my mother to Cuba. And I took my mother. Sisters in over 40 years, and I brought her home. And my father let me take her and gave me money. He said, "Here's money for the family. Give the money to whoever needs it." And I went to go to the farm where my mother was born 80 years before. I went to the home my mother lived at. I spent time with her family. I would walk through her village and they say, "Oh, you must be Angelica's daughter. You look just like her." No one ever said that in the United States because nobody knew us. It was just wonderful. It was a wonderful experience. But what I tell you this is that my mother started to get a little sicker. She did. Oh, another thing, she became an American citizen. After 54 years in the United States, she gave up her green card and became an American citizen. I mean, these were things that I got to share with them. I got to be there. And what happened was, one of my favorite things, my sponsor, that first woman who sponsored me, she sponsored me for 5 years. And then she fired me. And she fired me, and I was very angry when she fired me because I thought, why would you fire me? I'm a wonderful sponsee, you know? And she said, I want you to be my friend. I think there's another woman to take you to another level. And I was insulted, but she gave me a gift, and I had my second sponsor, who was supposed to be your speaker, just so you know, but she's in Thailand speaking today. So maybe next year, right? She's been my sponsor for almost 22 years. And she's taught me so many things, this sponsor. One of the greatest things she's taught me, there's been so many about love and about the program, and what she's taught me that the moment is perfect. She always says, Laura, don't miss the moment. Because the addict that I am, I'm over here, I'm over there, and I miss the moment. Where am I going? Stay in the moment. So there's a story that I love to tell. Just before we left Cuba, does anybody know who Glenn Miller? Yeah, do you know what a vinyl record is? Vinyl? Yeah? Okay. So we're in my grandmother's house. And there's four women and myself, my mother's four sisters, and they put the music on, and the girls start dancing. So it's my mother and her sisters dancing. And I'm like, oh my. It was the moment. The moment was perfect. Never again would those four women be in the same room, dancing, having that opportunity, loving each other, having not seen each other for 40 years. The moment was perfect. And I started crying and crying. My mother says, Laurita, why are you crying? I was always a crybaby, because I know I cried all the time. So I cried because I was sad. Now I cry because I can feel. I can feel emotion. I can feel love. I can feel the truth. Even when it hurts, I can feel it. So I said to her, because this moment is perfect. And I have a snapshot in my mind that will never go away to the day I die. And that's because this program taught me anything I want to do, I can do, if I'm willing to do what I have to do to get there. And what I want to tell you is through these years, I've worked steps, I sponsor women, I do service, I continue to do service. I gave up H&I at the Spirit of Rotation. How to do it. No one's ever called me for a question. But one of the things that I want you to know is that my mother died soon after that. And you know, when you say you don't know why you're going to meetings and raising your hand and saying you're new in an area, well, when my mother died, I want to go back a second. My husband, gotta mention my husband before I close, okay? My husband, I knew in the rooms for years. So be careful who you're sitting next to. You just might marry them. You just might. And also, well, or at least across the room, you know. Be careful. And another good advice, you guys, don't worry about a thing. It's be careful who you sleep with in these rooms. Because you just might have to recover with them. And I say, it's true. I say that because when I got here, I wanted to do what I always did. Sleep around. Who slept? I had sex, okay? Nobody slept. We had sex. So my sponsor said to me, you know, you can't just do that. You just can't. And I said, why? And she said, because it's going to make you feel the way you felt before and you used to use over those feelings. So you could basically get your virginity back. And I said, sign me up. So my behavior changed, okay? And that's all it was. It was like being reborn again. My people respected me. I respected myself. Another big lesson I learned in this program is the 6-date rule. Does anybody know what that is? 6 dates before sex. 6 dates. What are you laughing at me? 6 times you go out on a date, you go to dinner, you go to a movie, so that you know whether or not. Now, I do not judge anybody who hasn't done it that way, because I didn't start out that way. It's how I finished. But it made a lot of sense, because you get to know somebody. So I was going on my 6th date with my husband, who's my husband today. And I said, I knew him for years in the program. He was kind of a guy that, he was very popular with the women. And I said, I'm not marrying a guy. I'm not getting involved with a guy like that. He just wants one thing. That's all he wants. See, I was judging him. So what happened through this process was that I started to see a man that I knew for 9 years in recovery, but I really didn't know him. That's how I thought he was. So what happened for me, my mother was very, very sick. She was dying, and I knew it was happening. And I tell you this because it's a true story. It was the night of, he wanted a 6th date, and I said, oh no, I can't, my mother's dying. And he said, it's okay, I am going to take you to a meeting and dinner, no sex. It's okay, you would just go to dinner and a meeting. Well, I ended up in his house. And you know what happened, right? And I tell you this because that morning, my pager went off, and it was my brother. My mother had died. Now, I don't know about you, but the addict said, here you are doing what you're doing, and your mother's dying. You're disgusting. How disgusting. You're always going to be no good. Even on the night of your mother's death, you're not doing the right thing. Well, thank God I was with him, because he grabbed me by the hand. He said, hit your knees, we're going to call the family, and I'm going with you to New York. I said, you can't go on the 7th date to my mother's funeral. No. And he said, yes. And when I tell you this, he came to my mother's funeral, and the other people that came to the funeral were people in Narcotics Anonymous. Susan, her husband, and her daughter stood at my mother's grave. Narcotics, I was going to those meetings so that NA could be there for me on the day that was the worst day of my life. Did I know that those years before? No, but I followed my sponsor. She was a very smart woman. I followed her direction. I didn't have to stand next to the grave alone. My husband stood at his parents' grave alone because he wasn't clean. He says, in Narcotics Anonymous, you don't have to do anything alone. So he went with me. And the night that they, in our country or in our religion, they closed the casket, my husband said to me, well, he was my, I don't know what he was my boyfriend, my 7th date. Anyway, he said to me, I want to meet your mother. I said, what? He said, I want you to introduce me to your mother. So I brought him to the casket, and I said, Steve, this is Mama. Angie, this is Steve. And he bent over. He touched her face. He kissed her on the cheek, and he said, I got it from here. I got it from here. My Viking has never let me down, not once. He has been the man that I've searched for my whole life. He has loved me like my mother loved me, no matter what. He has stood by me through thick and thin. He stood by me. One of the great gifts, or one of the great things that I dreamt of getting clean was education I got, good job I got. I wanted to be a mother. I wanted to have a baby so bad that I would cry like this. I would see babies, I would hold them. People come to a meeting, start complaining about the kid. I was the one in the seat judging you, saying, give them to me, I'll take them. You don't want them, I'll take them. How could you say that? How could you say anything? Well, I would judge you. But it's true, you have tough times. And so I knew of a couple of people who had adopted children, who had gotten children through other people in the program, addicts that, whatever. So I used to pray all the time that God would give me a child. And my husband believed that, even though he had a grown son, that when you love somebody, their dreams become your dreams. So he said to me, we're going to find you the greatest doctor there is, and we're going to see what it is. And what happened was my mother had taken a particular drug, not drugs like us, but a drug to not lose the pregnancy with me that affected me. Did she know all those years before? No. But I had to go to a specialist. And you know what? All the prayers of Narcotics Anonymous, people would say to me, I know you're going to get pregnant this time. I mean, groups of women, we would pray together for me. They pray for me. Every time I am happy to tell you, very happy to tell you, that my last attempt at being a mother, I became pregnant and I have a 9-year-old son. Hooray! Was surrendering, saying, stop trying to control it. If it's your will, may your will be done. And when I finally did that, of course I had the greatest doctor, and I gave birth. It was the most wonderful thing. I mean, it's come full circle. The emptiness is gone. And I know about complaining in a meeting about your kid. I have a kid. He drives me crazy sometimes, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. I love and adore him. I have the greatest husband in the world for me. I have some of the greatest friends ever. I have no problems with anybody. No problems. I don't fight with people. You won't see me in a parking lot fighting. You might see me in Italy yelling at somebody, but you won't see me fighting in the streets like before. You can trust me with your children. You can trust me with your bank account. You can trust me with your husband. You can trust me with your girlfriend. You can trust me with your secrets. You can trust me with your heart, as I've trusted you with mine. I hope you understand that Narcotics Anonymous for me was the best thing that ever happened to me. I healed so many of my wounds. I built a career up. I have a wonderful job today. I help addicts. I went back to school, I did groups for you. I can't tell you the gifts and the healing. And when my father died, he said to me, you've changed. I get it, keep doing what you're doing. And he never told me he loved me. I always say, do you love me? He goes, of course I love you. He didn't know how to say it. But he told me before he died, he loved me. Anything you dream about, anything you want, anything you desire, it's possible. I guess it's from desperation, but passion. If you have the passion, if you have the faith, even if you don't have the faith, I have the faith that it can happen for you. Believe me, because I didn't believe it one time. Somebody believed in me. I know that anything is possible. And if you've heard nothing, if there's been nothing, know that this program is about love. It's a love that we've been searching for our whole lives. It's relationships that I always dreamed about. Friendships. I mean, my sponsor, when my mother died, she's my second mother. That's not supposed to happen, but it happened. I have women that I sponsored that gave birth, and I was there because I didn't have a baby. Just 2 weeks ago, one of my sponsees gave birth. I was there. Okay. anything you dream of can happen. You know, dreams come true. Miracles do happen. And if no one's told you that they love you today, I love you. Thank you.